ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, we got another somebody else calling in to let the Killer Bees know that the Astros are playing baseball right now. I don't know how. They begin at 3:05. They're saying the Astros have runners first and second in the top of the fourth in a scoreless game with nobody out. Couldn't be, because they started at 3:05. 713-780-3776. That was caller number 7, nice enough to tell us that some game's going on. ABC Eric saying,
yeah, the Yankees are playing. Because someone texted in and said Aaron Judge hit a home run. He hadn't hit a home run, and then he hit a home run.
Yeah, that was weird.
Very weird.
That was very weird, because somebody texted the Judge hit a homer, and then I looked at the MLB app, because I have it up on my computer right now. And, he said that Judge homered. He hadn't homered yet.
I thought we were the ones doing the trolling, and then I thought they were trolling the trollers.
That was weird.
And then after all of that was said and we found out he hadn't hit one, then he hit one.
Yeah, that blew my mind. ABC Eric said, might have to retire this bit, fellas. You're making the Killer Bees fans realize that they're not just that smart, SMH. 1273, game is on, idiots. That's my favorite one so far. Thanks for letting us know that the game is on when it starts at 3:05, even though they're scoreless in the top of the fourth. 8693, I predict Myers makes a diving catch in the bottom of the second later today, and he'll land awkwardly on that shoulder. I hope that he's okay. After potentially landing awkward later this evening on that shoulder. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So David Culley went on OutKick 360, talking about his time as the head coach of the Houston Texans, which wasn't a very long time, just the one and done for David Culley here in the city of Houston. But he talked about the disagreements within the staff. I think he was talking about he and Nick Caserio, how that was the root of his departure as the Texans head coach.
Oh, well, I think Nick and I were on the same page going into the year with everything that was going on. I think in the end, when the season was over, they wanted me to do some things with my staff that I was not going to do. I didn't feel like I needed to do. And in the end, 2 days later, after having that conversation, I was fired.
All right, so what do you think that was? What do you think that was there that David Culley alluded to on OutKick 360?
I think Tim Kelly probably first comes to mind as a guy that Culley seemed to attach his wagon to right away and build a relationship with. And you know, you could see where writing on the wall in a lot of ways, especially if Deshaun wasn't going to be your quarterback, and that was also a Deshaun guy, that they would want him to go in a different direction to kind of open up the offense more. And if he didn't want to do it, then there you go.
I think that was it, too. I think the fact that it's a no-brainer that it was Tim Kelly, because, like, Lovie Smith's now your head coach. So, like, I don't think Caserio is putting the pressure on David Culley to fire Lovie Smith. I don't think we're looking at positional coaches down the road. To me, it's the obvious Tim Kelly, and that David Culley was willing to die on the sword for Tim Kelly is quite frankly bizarre to me, because, I mean, maybe they knew each other in the coaching circles before he ever took over for Bill O'Brien, but Tim Kelly was a Bill O'Brien guy, not a David Culley guy, so that he was willing to fall on the sword and lose the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that he never thought he was going to get as a head coach in the NFL is incredible to me. And maybe that says a lot about him, like, as an individual and as a human being, that he's willing to put his head coaching life on the line for one Tim Kelly. I find it professionally to be very foolish, if I'm being completely honest.
I mean, look, you got to know how to play your cards right, right? I mean, you signed a contract. No one ever thought you were going to be a head coach. You know, you got, for some ungodly reason, you got an opportunity you weren't ever supposed to get. But if you just played your cards right, minded your P's and Q's, and, you know, kind of followed along. Not that you were ever going to be headed to a bigger, better job after this, but you probably could have seen the majority of that contract through as the head coach, and you could have retired knowing I was once a head coach in the National Football League.
Right.
I don't think that you should be kind of needing bigger underwear, walking around the locker room and in the front office, kind of basically pushing back to a general manager that gave you a gig that no one else was going to give you.
Lamont, with a great point. How can David Culley call it his staff when he didn't hire a single person?
That's a really good point.
That's what makes it so bizarre, is that David Culley was willing to risk his job to end his head coaching life in the NFL for a dude that he didn't even hire. For a dude that, I mean, it's not like even Tim Kelly was good, right? Like, if you're standing on the table for a guy who has a top five offense, then you can understand it. Or if you had a long relationship with this guy, I find it to be very bizarre, because I don't think Tim Kelly would do it the other way around. Like, if Nick Caserio came to Tim Kelly and he said, look, you can be the head coach tomorrow, do you think Tim Kelly's like, nah, this is David Culley's team? No, absolutely not. He doesn't do that. But let's play the scenario out. What if David Culley says, okay, Nick Caserio, I'm willing to do that. Like, make the no-brainer decision, right? Okay, we can get rid of Tim Kelly. We can bring up Pep Hamilton. David Culley's still the head coach of the Houston Texans.
I think it's a very good chance.
With that scenario.
Absolutely.
I believe that's the most likely scenario.
We're still bridging the gap. We're still rebuilding.
And you're paying. You're paying when you're not ready to win, which I think is a factor.
And you're not paying a big-time coach big-time money. Mm-hmm. You're doing essentially, and I know people are going to take this the wrong way, but you're doing what the Rockets did with Stone and Silas, taking guys that either have no experience at all, that both didn't have any head coaching experience or general manager experience, but taking guys because you know that they can bridge the gap, and no matter what happens, you can either blame them or get rid of them in a couple of years, but you don't have to pay them any kind of salary at all.
Right.
And so it's the best move for the organization. They would have been just fine because, look, take that and parlay it, Jeremy, with the fact that Caserio's in the coach's box on game days, and he's not just listening, he's talking.
Yeah.
He liked the fact that he was Geppetto. He liked the fact that his puppet was the head coach. He liked the fact that because the coach allowed it, he realized not many coaches would. So he liked the fact that he was getting away with what he needed to get away with to kind of be heavily involved while Culley was celebrated as being a head coach in the NFL, but he wasn't around for the long term.
And I also think that this kind of confirms everything we had heard about it. Reports are that there are philosophical differences between the two. Heck, Nick Caserio, in his press conference after he fired David Culley, said that there are philosophical differences. You have David Culley telling Outkick 360 here saying we had philosophical differences, and because of that, or the reason for that, was the staff disagreements, which I think we can summarize was Tim Kelly. To me, there's no other plausible answer here. So if David Culley says, okay, Nick, let's fire Tim Kelly. Let's just promote Pep Hamilton, which they eventually did. David Culley, more likely than not, is still the head coach of the Houston Texans. The question I have for you in the Hive, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, would you be okay with that? Would you be okay with David Culley still as the head coach of the Texans? You still have Pep as the OC. You still have Lovey as the DC. Maybe you even still have the other assistants that you hired below them as well. Would you be okay with David Culley if he said, Nick Caserio, yeah, let's fire Tim Kelly, let's promote Pep, which they ended up doing anyways, and David Culley still the head coach of the Houston Texans?
I will say this, Jeremy, and I don't think that everybody thinks this way, but there's a guy that maybe the tread had worn off most of the tires anyway. He got the gig. He basically realized after a year, this isn't what I signed up for. And unlike a lot of guys, especially if he wasn't a head coach and was just a position coach or one of the coaches on the staff, you're always looking over your shoulder and you're always being concerned about where your next contract is coming from. The fact that he knew he had job security, the fact that he knew he was going to get paid, and because he was, you know, like I said, kind of long in the tooth and getting ready for retirement, he realized, hey, maybe there's a way that I don't have to do this again and I still get paid.
Yeah. But the question though, like, would you be okay with David Culley as the head coach? Because I think that the Texans upgraded at head coach, but to what extent?
I would not.
Why not?
I would not want him for year two, because I would think that no matter what experience he didn't have as a head coach, he had too much experience on NFL staffs to realize that he shouldn't be making the mistakes he made a year ago. He made too many rookie mistakes,
sure,
for a guy that's been in the league too long.
I just don't think that he's affecting the progression and development of the young players. Because frankly, I don't think he's doing a whole lot of the positional coaching.
If he's referring to it as his staff, I would believe that he was still trying to have a say with Tim Kelly. I believe that he was still trying to have a say with what his coaches were doing.
You think he's telling Lovie Smith what to do?
Defensively, he probably knew that it was in good hands.
More likely to tell the offense than the defense, because he was an offensive guy, receiver coach for, what was it, Baltimore, when they caught no touchdowns that year as a receiving unit. Look, I believe the Texans upgraded from David Culley to Lovie Smith. That's not a hot take. I think if we took a poll about who would you rather have as the head coach of the Houston Texans, Lovie Smith or David Culley, I don't think it would quite get to 100%, but I think it'd be pretty close to 100%. It might be like 90-10, Lovie Smith over David Culley. So you got better there. I just don't believe that the Texans put a whole lot of importance on their head coach. And because of that, because Nick Caserio doesn't prioritize head coach, Blankers, that's why the Texans need a great quarterback. I'll explain that next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, I've been telling you about them forever and a day. It's because I've seen results thanks to good people at Apollo Men's Health. They reduced my body fat. My weight went down. My muscle mass went up. They kept my blood pressure at the right levels and all the other things they were able to do because I trusted them. And I answered their questions honestly, told them what I was trying to get to, and they got me there. And they can do the same thing for you. And for those of you that are looking for more energy in your day, for every single day that you're out there in the real world, not trying to win an Olympic medal, just trying to win the next 24 hours, they can help with that too. Because from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you experience issues, especially as you get older, and you think that those days are gone and you can't get them back, you can. But you have to realize your health is your wealth and you have to invest in yourself just like you do the stock market. You do that with the good people at Apollo Men's Health and they get you started on a program that works. Check them out today. Go to apollomh.com and you can see all the different services they offer. And as part of that, if something that you see is something that you want to do, make a first appointment. When you find out by doing that, that most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders, all you got to do after that is just be honest when you go in for your first visit and they ask you tough questions. Because the first thing they're going to ask you is what you want to achieve. Do you want more energy? Do you want to get on a workout program? Do you want to recover quicker? What are your goals and aspirations as you meet with them? And they'll put you on a program that works. They'll get you on a plan that's going to get you results. And they're going to show you that they know exactly what to do to get you where you want to go. That's why I like them. You'll love them too. They're great people because they care about their patients. They're making a difference on a daily basis. Check them out today. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
A lot of people are texting us in. We've had seven calls today, 713-780-ESPN, telling us that the Astros game is currently on. We've been telling you that the Astros game begins at 3:05 because the Astros game does start at 3:05. People on Twitch are telling us the Yahoo Sports app is saying that the game is on right now. I've never been a big believer in Yahoo.
We always talk about those fictitious click-driving headlines that they like to throw out there.
They're saying it's in the top of the fifth. They're in a scoreless tie on a getaway day in an afternoon in New York. Apparently, that's what's going on. 713-780-3776.
Our love fest with Yuli continues because he's staying red hot.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. 9147, you guys are dumb. You won't even check to see if you're wrong about the game. Yeah, I think it's Yahoo.
Welcome to the Hive.
That's wrong. 5066, say what you want, Killer Bees, but they're actually playing right now. Go look if you don't believe it. 6-3.
I'm just waiting for someone to have an 0-3 count, Jeremy.
6-3. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's difficult to do in baseball. 6389, the show always gets Astros game time wrong. 3895, the Astros are in fact playing right now, you goof. 8693, the wise men of the group. Killer Bees wants you to listen to their show, all capital letters. The show ends at 3, so the Astros start at 3:05. Come on, Houston, get it together. I won't confirm nor deny that, but 713-780-ESPN, Astros play at 3:05. 713-780-3776. 0446 saying it's on the ESPN app. I don't believe in ESPN's app. I believe in its local radio station.
Agreed.
But I don't believe in its app. 1538 says some of the Killer Bees don't get it. So David Culley was talking about staff disagreements with he and Caserio. Philosophical differences is what led to his departure as the Houston Texans head coach. Do you think that Caserio, before we get to that other point, do you think Caserio is more concerned with firing Culley, or Kelly, not Culley, that he was more concerned with firing Kelly, Tim Kelly, OC, or promoting Pep Hamilton? Because I know they go hand in hand, but which one took priority?
I think it was – I really think that it was kind of like a – you needed both of them. I think that he was afraid of losing Pep Hamilton as a quarterback, as a coach. I think he knew that there were enough teams, including Matt Rhule in Carolina. I think there were enough teams that were looking for offensive-minded offensive coordinators that Pep Hamilton, because of his reputation alone, was going to get a gig somewhere else as an OC if you didn't give him one. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, Tim Kelly was the guy that only was somehow able to survive Bill O'Brien and keep his job because there were hopes that Deshaun Watson was still going to be a member of this team. And Deshaun was outspoken about saying, I like Tim. I like working with Tim.
Yeah.
And they wanted Deshaun to be happy, so they kept Tim around.
I think that's why Tim was kept.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so by the time that you made sure you told Tim he was going to be around, Deshaun, you came to the realization quickly, thanks to Deshaun, he wasn't. But you left him there for one more year. But then I think that Nick realized, hey, look, I run the risk of losing a guy that might be an up-and-coming OC in this league that a lot of teams are going to come after if I don't lock him up. Similar, but on a lesser scale, to what we're seeing with the Astros with Dusty and his bench coach, Espada, because of the fact that you're going to have, if you have a guy in your system, but you know that he could get promoted elsewhere, you got a tough decision to make, and I think that's why they were hand in hand. I think that he didn't want Tim Kelly anyway, but yeah, he also didn't want to run the risk of hanging on too long to do the right thing, contract-wise or otherwise, to save money, and then lose Pep Hamilton. So he did both at the same time.
I believe it was more about Pep Hamilton. I think that they wanted to elevate Pep Hamilton. I think they do go hand in hand. I think Pep Hamilton's the slight lead between the two there. We asked the question, would you be okay if David Culley was still the head coach? If he told Nick Caserio, yeah, that's fine, I'll fire Tim Kelly, we'll promote Pep Hamilton, that's A-okay. 4683 says, yeah, I'd be okay with it because Pep is the OC of this team, would still be in the same position as they are in now. Culley was a figurehead with no power, just a guy to get fired and hire a better coach in 2023. That's about where I'm at with it. 1299 says, probably wanted Culley to replace Kelly with McNown. I don't think that McCown was ever seriously considered it as an offensive coordinator. Nope. It was way more likely that Josh McCown would have been the head coach of the Houston Texans before he was the offensive Absolutely. Coordinator of the Houston Texans.
I totally agree with that because I think that there's too much. There are too many idiosyncrasies and X's and O's and very elaborate details that go with being an offensive coordinator. And I think that with a guy with no NFL experience, it's easy to be a leader of men. It's easy to be the guy that puts the guys in charge of doing the play, yep. the play after play after play coaching. It's a lot more difficult if you go in for your first gig in the league and say, here, run an offense mm-hmm. and do everything that's around it. I think it could be overwhelming in a short period of time.
3364 says, I do miss Culley's having the barbecues. Those were fun, even though we were never invited to said barbecues.
I miss the fact that his tongue was his bubblegum.
Yeah, that poor tongue. Poor David Culley's tongue. That stinks. But anyways, to the point, because like we mentioned David Culley. Like he was willing to keep David Culley as long as the OC and the DC were going to be, well, in Pep Hamilton's case, different. In Lovie Smith's case, the same. So he moved on from Culley in that regard. We've also seen, I think, with Nick Caserio and the way that he has handled two head coaching interviews. One, that he ended up with David Culley. Two, that he interviewed Josh McCown twice. Three times, actually, two separate years, that he ended up with Lovie Smith after a Sunday supper when he was never a candidate. I think it's very easy to see that Nick Caserio really doesn't prioritize the head coach position. I think he puts more weight in the OC and the DC than he does the head coach, if I'm being completely honest with you. But because of that very reason, because Nick Caserio doesn't put priority on his head coach of his NFL organization, that's why the Texans need a great quarterback. Because to me, there's two different ways to become a Super Bowl contender. Either you have a great quarterback, Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, let's go down the list, et cetera, Rodgers, Burrow, Brady. Whatever. Brady's another, obviously, the best example. But because the Texans don't prioritize a head coach, that's why they need a great quarterback. Because the other side of the argument, if you don't have a great quarterback, well, how do you get to a Super Bowl? You have a great head coach. McVay got to the Super Bowl with Goff. Bill Belichick, now he had Brady for most of his career, but a great head coach. You have to take them seriously.
He got Mac Jones to lead a team to the playoffs in his first year.
Exactly. So a great head coach can elevate an organization. Jerry, I think Shanahan's an example of that, too, with San Francisco.
But don't you also feel like the reason why this franchise didn't need a good head coach is because Nick Caserio, in his heart of hearts and mind of minds, believes he is the head coach. He is the guy that is doing what the head coach is in charge of doing in the short term. And when you do get to a point where you have the quarterback that you know is going to lead you, that's when you get a really good or great head coach, because now it's more important to have that guy doing the little things and the details that are going to matter. I think in the short term, all the things we saw from how much he was in at practice and sure. how much in meetings and how much he's in the booth and talking during on the headsets, I believe he feels like short-term he is, in part, the head coach.
I think that the Texans have a different view of the power structure of an NFL organization than most. And Casario has alluded to other sports. He's talked about, like, in basketball, where GMs kind of lay down the law and, like, have the plan of how an organization's going to be. He's mentioned baseball a lot of times, where the general manager
basketball
really
started
has most of the say.
The front office hiring the assistant coaches.
Yeah, and I think if you look at baseball, too, really, I mean, you have general managers making out lineup cards. You have general manager saying this is where we want pitchers to go, this is how many times through the order. Like, you've seen that power
change in baseball.
The analytics
experts are trumping the old school baseball mind.
And Casario has alluded to that. He has mentioned that. So I'm not going to rule out the possibility that Casario sees himself, like, not by title as the head coach, but as the authority figure and the end-all be-all of this organization. Where I would give Casario the benefit of the doubt, though, I don't think he would consider himself great. Right?
No.
I don't think he would say, I am a great head coach, great GM, great figurehead of an organization, and because of me, we're going to go to the Super Bowl and win it all.
But that's
why they need a great quarterback.
Yeah, I see that, right? But my point more on the Casario front is that as long as you want to work with me, but allow me to be me and do what I want to do, running everything the way I want it run, and if that means me interjecting and me being more of a bigger role and talking more than any other general manager in the history of the NFL maybe had done, and you're okay with that, then you can be here. And just like we heard with the David Culley quote, if you suddenly don't feel like that's for you, or like when Lovey came in and said, that's not something I'm going to do, then you realize, hey, part of the reason why he hired Culley is because he wanted a guy that was going to lay down and be a puppet so that he could still implement his system his way, regardless of anything else with who the assistant coaches were and everything they were trying to do.
I think he puts a lot of emphasis on his assistants because he believes in player development, and I think that a play caller is very important in the NFL. Let's be honest. Who's calling the plays matters a whole lot. A lot of times in the NFL, the head coach will be responsible for one side of the ball. McVay, Shanahan, they'll call plays for the offensive side. Does Sala still call plays for the Jets defensively? We'll ask Aspen about that. But, like, to me, that's what Casario views as the importance
Sala?
Of this staff. Sala, yeah. What'd I say?
Solace.
I didn't say Solace.
I think you did, but it doesn't matter.
I definitely didn't say Solace. We can check the tape.
Yeah.
I might have said Sala versus Sala,
I
didn't say Solace. I'm not sure.
And you know what? I think that, again, he's because he's a younger coach. I think that he shouldn't because of the fact that I think there's a time that he could.
I don't know what's right. I'll be completely honest with you. I don't know what's right or wrong.
As you're saying this, I'm thinking about McCarthy trying to call offensive plays forever for the Packers.
Sure. But do you not want McVay to call plays? Do you not want Shanahan to call plays?
And
so it goes both
you're right,
ways.
And it is. It's a delicate balance because those are young guys too. So it's weird to say that after a certain point in time when a coach has established himself, now you let them, especially on the defensive side of the football. I think that's where it makes more sense. I think offensively with the new kind of the new passing, pass happy, open style plays that the offenses are running, it's going to be interesting. Like in Miami, do you think your boy's going to call plays?
Oh, yeah.
See, and that's going to be
I think it's part of the reason he left San Francisco because he didn't call plays there.
Right, but he was the OC. As the head coach, it's different. But if you want to try it, you can do it. Like I said, McCarthy's been a guy that's done it forever in a day. But you know, Rodgers also had the ability to trump him by audibling once the play came in.
I'm okay with a head coach calling plays, period. Like, I'm fine with it, but unless you have somebody on your staff that's better at you than it. Like, if you're so prideful, like, McVay's a bad example because I think he's a great offensive mind. Shanahan's a bad example because I think it's a great offensive mind. Maybe Bill O'Brien's the best example. Like, Bill O'Brien called plays here for a very long time. Tim Kelly's not a great example, but let's assume for a second, bear with me here, that Tim Kelly was a better play caller than Bill O'Brien. Like, if Bill O'Brien's still calling plays over somebody that's better than him, that's where you get in trouble. Like, I still think you can call plays and manage a game. I don't think that that's something that's out of the realm of possibility. I think you can do both. And if you're an elite play caller, quite frankly, that's part of your allure. Like, I want Shanahan because I want him to call plays. I want McVay because I want him to call plays. We'll see if McDaniel's that way. We'll see if Sala's that way.
Oh, boy, Minnesota.
We'll see if Lovey's that way. Lovey's going to call plays defensively.
The Minnesota.
O'Connell.
O'Connell. Yeah, I think that, look, I think that they know the blueprint. And I think that from an ego standpoint, you want to be the guy that shows not only do I know what plays work, I want to be a guy that can orchestrate an offense by calling plays on a play-by-play basis. I think it's something that you're going to see more and more come back, but I think you have to have the right head coach. And you have to have the right head coach, not only from the standpoint of knowing the side of the football that you're coaching, but also realizing how to balance it with all the decisions you have to make as the head coach both in-game and during the week.
I want to ask you on the other side, because do you have to have one? Do you have to have either A, a great head coach, or B, a great quarterback? And because Caserio has shown us he doesn't prioritize head coach, does that show you that the Texans need a great QB? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Somebody just texted us, 713-780-3776, saying that the game's on AT&T Sports Southwest right now. It's deep fake. The Astros play at 3:05. 713-780-3776. We've had seven callers.
They can fake the whole game now?
Yeah.
Damn.
It's Hollywood. I mean, it's impressive what they can do in TV production nowadays. It's quite fascinating. Seven people have called us on the HRMP listener line trying to tell us the game's already going on when it starts at 3:05. Hundreds have texted in at 713-780-3776.
That's not an exaggeration by much, because we have gotten a boatload of texts.
Deep fake. Don't trust Yahoo's app. Don't trust ESPN's app. Don't trust Google. Trust the Killer Bees. Game starts at 3:05. We're on the air until 3. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, because great head coach and or great quarterback. Can you go to a Super Bowl without either? But before that, let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Reginald, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. What's going on, Reginald?
Yeah, how y'all doing?
What's up, man?
Since we were discussing Lovie Smith earlier, and I was speaking earlier, Lovie Smith, didn't he take Rex Grossman to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
And Rex Grossman's not nothing near close to a great quarterback. And I have one more thing I want to say about Davis Mills. Based on last year, honestly, you don't know what you have in Davis Mills. So, I mean, he could go either way. And I'm going to be quiet and let y'all speak on that.
Thanks, Reginald. Appreciate you listening.
I love that quote. I'm going to start saying that when I ask Blankers a question. I'm just going to go on, be quiet, and let you speak on that.
Okay. Look, I think that kind of the way you set it up for this segment as we lead back into it, I don't think they're at a point right now where either one of them, I don't think you have to have a great quarterback. I don't think you have to have a great head coach, because you're still too early in the developmental process of trying to build a roster and get enough young quality players to where you can start focusing on winning on a regular basis. And because of that, I think there might be a point in time where you're right. And I think that one or the other, or if not both, have to be true. But I think that right now, neither have to be true, because of the fact that they're bridging the gap in so many ways. They're bridging their quarterback till they find the right one. They're bridging their head coach until they're good enough to need the right one.
Yeah. See, I think you're taking it from like a Texans perspective.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fair perspective to take it, because the Texans aren't Super Bowl contenders yet. I don't necessarily disagree with Reginald that Lovie Smith once upon a time was a great head coach. I think whenever he went to the Super Bowl in 2006, he had a great defense.
I was going
to
say, he also had a great bunch of players.
Sure. But I think the fact that he was a great defensive mind, and I still think he's a very good defensive mind, you couple that with a very good defense, it's why he was a great head coach in 2006. Now, Rex Grossman, you're right. Rex Grossman, not a great quarterback. I would say that if you look at the last 20 years, he's very mediocre as a starting quarterback in the NFL, probably even less than mediocre. And he did go to the Super Bowl, Rex Grossman. I would say 16 years ago, a lot different brand of football that's being played now. If a Rex Grossman in 2006 playing right now in 2022, I don't think that team is Super Bowl caliber.
That's a good point, because as we talked about it with other discussions we've had, it's a new day and age in the NFL, and the offense has changed so much. It's so pass happy and RPOs and everything else, to where you can't have the old school game managers you once had.
No, I completely. That's something that I point to, is that the NFL has changed so much because of the rules, because of the way it's played, because it's so pass happy now with cutting edge offense, that it's a much different brand of football. Now, whenever we look at it from a broad perspective, do you think you can be a Super Bowl contender with a great quarterback? It's not a trick question.
Wait,
I'm not setting
you
up. With a great quarterback, can you be a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, reel them off. You're a Super Bowl contender.
Right.
Now, can you be a Super Bowl contender with a great head coach?
Depends on who your quarterback is.
there you go. It kind of proves the point. Yeah. And since Nick Caserio does not, like, I think that a Belichick with the, like, the right team, he's a Super Bowl caliber coach. I think McVay, Super Bowl caliber. Shanahan, I think Super Bowl caliber.
It's also what we've been talking about. The fact is that in the past, you could say the opposite. You could say, if you got a great head coach, if you have other elements of your team that are outstanding, you don't have to have a great quarterback. But because of the fact that, and the key is, what's the contract of your great quarterback too? Because we've also seen that overpaying your quarterback these days can be detrimental. But when you talk about just how the offense has evolved in the league, how it's changed both based on the rules and you can't touch anybody anymore, and the fact that it's even more pass-centric, and the fact that you're consistently on every play opening it up and spreading it out, that you need a guy that can make all the throws, but also can make plays with his legs, that's also smart enough to do everything you need him to do. And so, therefore, that's why I think it's changed so much. And now the answer to that question is, you still have to have a great quarterback.
7288, y'all are crazy. Those rainbow passes Grossman threw were magical. We got a Rex Grossman stan, which is fine, which is fine. Look, I prioritize the quarterback over the head coach, too. But I do believe that you need a great head coach if you don't have the great quarterback to be successful. I think the Rams getting to the Super Bowl, Jared Goff, is an example of that. I think that Kyle Shanahan getting to the Super Bowl, Jimmy Garoppolo, and being a drop pass away from winning a Super Bowl is an example of that. So
drop pass away or an overthrown pass?
Overthrown pass. My bad.
No, so, I'm just saying, because he blew that.
You're right. But if you don't have the great quarterback, you must have the great head coach. But that circles around to the whole point. Nick Caserio has shown us in two separate coaching cycles that he does not put priority in the head coach. He hired stinking David Culley. He interviewed Josh McCown two separate years, and he ended up with Lovie Smith whenever he was not even a candidate for the job after a Sunday supper, and because of the Brian Flores lawsuit, he got the job. He does not prioritize head coach. He has told you that through his actions.
I think he will. I think there'll be a point in time that he will.
Okay, maybe. He hasn't done it yet.
No, because he hasn't needed to. That was my point earlier. He hasn't needed to because he doesn't have the roster or the expectations of winning that he will if everything goes as planned down the road.
Why wait on hiring that great head coach, though?
Because I don't think a great head coach is going to take this job or look at it seriously like we've talked about, too. They didn't have any really outstanding candidates that have looked at this job and said, I want it.
If you believe that Jonathan Gannon, not to say that I believe it, if you believe Jonathan Gannon's going to be a great head coach, he would have taken the job.
See, there's a reason why everybody said that this was the least popular, least exciting job of all the jobs that were open when we saw the offseason start.
It was. In terms of head coaches. Not arguing that, so, but there's only one of 32.
But I'm saying to the point, you're going to get to a point with Caserio, and I'm not sure he's going to be happy about it because I think he likes all this power happy abilities to be involved in all these things. And Lovey's already basically cut the cord on him being in the booth and speaking on the headsets. But I think that at a certain point, the talent level is going to be such that he's going to have to go out and get a guy that from play to play and locker room to game has a complete, utter control and grasp on everything so that they can take it to the next level. Because I think at a certain point, you actually outgrow whoever you have that's bridging the gap for you.
I think it's a fair point. Two things that I would say in contrast to that is that Caserio has shown us, and maybe he does change and evolve, that he believes in a different model of an NFL hierarchy between his organization. He's compared it to baseball, with GMs kind of calling the shots. And secondly, he's had two coaching searches, and again, maybe changes, but he's had two coaching searches where you've had candidates like Hines Ward and Josh McCown and David Culley and Leslie Frazier, who hasn't been taken seriously in quite some time, and Lovie Smith. And look, Lovie Smith an upgrade, but you didn't even interview him, and nobody has interviewed Lovie Smith since he got fired from Illinois. So how you ended with Lovie Smith, very weird, and Lovie Smith was not seen around NFL circles as a head coach again. So I believe so far, and look, I think it's fair to say, so far, he's not put priority on his head coach. Maybe that changes. We'll see. But we can only take him for what he has shown us so far. But the second part of that, if you don't have a great head coach, you better have a great quarterback. And that's what it shows about Davis Mills, that either he better evolve and show this year that he's a great quarterback, or the Texans are going to go find that great quarterback.
See, I was going to say, it's one thing. I understand what you're saying if you're a competitive football team with a roster of competitive players. I don't think you have to have a great quarterback in the first couple of years of a rebuild.
See, I think we're looking at it from two different perspectives.
Yeah.
I think you're looking at it from where the Texans are in their plight
yep.
to being a playoff organization at some point, and I agree with all of those things. I'm looking at it from a blanket statement, NFL across the board.
Okay.
If you don't have a great head coach, you better have a great a quarterback to have a chance. And if you don't have a great quarterback, you better have a great head coach to have a chance. You got to have one or the other.
I'll give you one that I think is a really – if he's not great yet, I think that especially with his grasp of the offensive system, I think Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield, and obviously Baker trying to play through injuries didn't help either. But I think that the only reason why they even had a chance to sniff the playoffs at the end of the season was the fact that Kevin Stefanski is that guy. And with the rest of the roster that you know I think was Super Bowl caliber, if you did also have a great –
yeah.
quarterback, it might have been a different story.
I mean, sometimes you need both. 0830 texted in something that I feel is the most antiquated thought you could possibly have when you talk about mediocre quarterbacks winning a Super Bowl. Also, Derek, you're on the line. We'll get to you first whenever we come back. 713-780-ESPN. If you don't have a great head coach, do you need a great QB? If you don't have a great QB, do you need a great head coach? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew...
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Come hang out with us on Friday. ESPN 97.5 from 7 till 3 will be out at Cobo's Q in Edo, our summer circuit. We'll be there bright and early, 7 a.m. with the bench. Come by, hang out, enjoy Cobo's incredible food. Full bar, too, for your drinkers out
there. Edo, right? They're in Edo?
Edo.
Eat all day.
That's right. Eat all day with us and Cobo's Q. Get your long weekend started with some fun. You can register to win a new grill from Texas Star Grill Shop and a weekend getaway from Lafayette Travel. Great Boudin there. This Friday, we'll see you. Cobo's Q, 2012 Rusk Street, a short walk from Minute Maid Park. I cannot wait to be out there.
Love that spot.
On Friday.
Love the story,
oh,
too.
Oh, such a good spot.
Raul is such a great dude, but going from food truck in a Atascocita to that location and to have people finally all catching on to how great the food and atmosphere is and the way he's done it right with that place, it's a great story.
Whenever we were there last, Arian Foster walked in.
That's right. Just walked in unannounced. I guess he eats there all the time. He's friends with Raul, and that was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Joining us, Derek, you're on the HRMP listener line. You're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Derek?
You mentioned the Cleveland coach and great, and we got the debate about the great coach, great quarterback, or both, or either or, which is which. Chucky, the
John
team that Tampa Bay Bucks.
When
Tampa Bay Bucks won that the year after Tony Dungy had built that team, and Chucky was handed the keys. So I don't know who that great coach or quarterback was at that time, quarterback. But as far as the Texans coach, to say he's not great, I mean, he took the Bears to the Super Bowl. The guy for... I mean, and Shanahan, like you said, was one overthrow or bad throw or whatever away. The guy took the team to the Super Bowl, and although he was not up as a candidate at this time, it fell in his lap or whatever, for whatever reason, and we all know why. But I wouldn't say he's not a great coach. He took the Bears to the Super Bowl. Also, the retread, what's his name for Bill Belichick? Before Tom Brady came along, the greatest quarterback of all time, he was with Cleveland, Belichick. He hadn't won before Tom. He hadn't won after Tom. Great coach. But the quarterback he's had him for 2 years, I think, right? And they still haven't gotten to where they wanted to be. So sometimes it's just fortune. Dan Reeves was a great a coach. But he had Michael Vick was a great quarterback, but not the best. So it's just fortune. It just happens, guy, but I don't say he's not a great coach. He went to one Super Bowl and lost to Tony Dungy, who set Tampa Bay up for Chucky to receive the keys to the car.
Appreciate the call, Derek. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. I think, advocating for Lovie Smith as a great head coach. I think he was in Chicago. He was not. Tampa Bay, I'm willing to even throw out. There was some weird situations there.
Yep.
He was awful in Illinois. But I'm also willing to admit that the college game and the NFL game, two very different beasts.
That's a hard adjustment for a lot
very
of coaches.
Very different beasts between the two. I'm not going to rule out the possibility Lovie Smith can be a great head coach. But to Derek's point, like, you really need one more than the other. And it sounds like he's leaning great quarterback over great head coach. It's also funny that he called Belichick a retread, because he's not wrong. But how often do you hear Bill Belichick referred to as a retread?
It's true. And the fact that he was retreaded from Cleveland, but he was also, you could say he was retreaded with the Jets, but he left the Jets hanging after a day. But from the standpoint of again, I keep going back to this point, is you don't need Lovie to be great, but you need to kind of tap into where he has been very good his whole career. And that is from the standpoint of being able to manage people, being able to communicate with his team, being able to show who's boss, make the decisions that have to be made, and then work with the roster, whichever kind of roster you have, to try to get the most out of it by also trusting in the hiring of the assistant coaches that you had a part in hiring. Yep. It was a complete recipe for absolute disaster that ended up being a disaster with Cully and with Caserio picking his assistants. The fact that Lovie stepped in and already said, I don't think we're going to be doing that with him on the headset, and he had a say-so in his assistant coaches, already shows you they're in a better place. So I don't think Lovie has to be great. He just has to be really good at the things that a head coach is expected to do.
I think it was Lance saying the other day from people that he's been talking to in the organization that, like, Lovie's demanding more control, which is a lot different.
I could see that, too.
Of course. I mean, he's got pelts on the wall, whereas David Cully did not. 4683, didn't Peterson take Foles to the Super Bowl and beat Brady Belichick? Yes, I think it's a rhetoric question. I also think that's one of the greatest miracles in NFL history, that Doug Peterson took that Eagles team to a Super Bowl. I think it actually speaks very well of Doug Peterson.
Absolutely,
it does. It's why I think Jacksonville is on the way up, because I think Peterson's a great offensive mind. He had Carson Wentz playing at an MVP level, and he got Nick Foles to score 40-something points to beat the best resume in NFL football history. I think it's a good nod for Doug Peterson. All right, here's the text that I am sick of hearing about when you talk about you don't need great quarterbacks to win in the NFL. Because, look, I think we've kind of summarized how there's two different ways to cook the egg. Like, you got to either have a great quarterback to be a contender, or you have to have either a great head coach or, like, this oh my goodness, once-in-a-generation defense, Legion of Boom, that's hard to sustain over a period of time. But 0830 says you don't need a good quarterback to win the Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer and Brad Johnson proved that. That was 20 years ago.
Jeremy, that was so yesterday.
If those are
that was the conversation we had yesterday.
Sure, but if that's your best example of how non-great quarterbacks can win Super Bowls, that you have to resort back to a two decades ago, that's probably not a great argument.
No, it's not. And we talked about it yesterday when we were going through all of this. The game's evolved and changed too much. It's not the same game. So there's more expected of a quarterback, both physically as well as mentally. You could be a really sharp mentally as a quarterback and have a grasp on the offense and know exactly what needed to be done and be just fine. You can't do that anymore with all that's expected of the way the ball moves up and down the field. Just look at the Mahomes game against the Bills and look at what Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes did back and forth and back and forth. You can't do that as a game manager and stay in that kind of a game.
Like, how far back are we going to go to say that you don't need a great quarterback to win a Super Bowl? Like, do you need to go back to Jeff Hostetler for the Giants in 1990, Mark Rippon for the football team back in 1991? Like, how far back do you have to go? Like, if you're pulling something from 20 years ago and the game has evolved and sports evolve over years, it's to me not a very good argument for that side of the argument.
And you bring up a great point, because I do believe that Doug Peterson showed that he really has, he's a great offensive mind. It was crazy what he was able to do, especially just the Philly special to get your backup quarterback to execute that play. But I think that the one that I always go to, which, God bless you, Brendan, but it's your problem now. But what McVay was able to do with Goff, not only to get him paid what he was paid, but to be as competitive as he was, and also basically kind of pull the wool over the eyes of all these different NFL teams that didn't realize that he was so savvy and so smart, and he had a quarterback that was really kind of over his head. But because he was able to audibleize in his earpiece and use it up until the 15-second mark on the play clock, he was able to kind of navigate for Jared Goff what Jared Goff was supposed to be seeing when he saw the defense come to the line of scrimmage, and he was doing his work for him, and it got them a whole bunch of wins.
That's the great head coach aspect.
Yes.
But to me, you got to have one. And Caserio, to me, hasn't prioritized going out to get great head coaches. I think his coaching searches are better examples of that than maybe having Lovie Smith. 4683 saying, go back to Foles. there's always exceptions to the rule, right? Like, you can win a Super Bowl, but it's not the easier way to do it, or it's not the most common way to do it. Yeah, you can look back to Nick Foles. How many Super Bowl teams are winning championships with their backup quarterbacks? Like, not very many. They had a great run through the playoffs. I believe that Doug Peterson was a great offensive mind. You had LeGarrette Blount as your starting running back. Like, you didn't have great offensive pieces, and you won a Super Bowl. Their defense wasn't even, like, world-class, right? It wasn't the Bears. It wasn't the Ravens. And they still were able to win it. But that's the exception to the rule. Like, if you want to look at Foles, well, go look at the other seven quarterbacks around them, too, that won Super Bowls.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That we went through all that yesterday. When you and you think about it, it just further reiterates the point that this is a different time in NFL football. And as much as you want to believe that you can get by with a guy that's just limited athletically, but, you know, can be just a guy that manages the game to perfection, I don't believe you can. I don't think you do either. And I think that realistically, as a Texans fan, when you look at it, you have higher aspirations for Davis Mills to be more than just a game manager. But if after this season he doesn't prove to you that he can be much more than a game manager, no matter what he proves to be, and no matter how much he proves that he belongs in the league, it still behooves you to look at whoever and wherever you can get a better quarterback, or at least competition for him. And if this draft is coming in with four or five quarterbacks that could be NFL ready to be better than just a game manager, you better take one.
9982 says Peyton and the Broncos defense that carried him to the Super Bowl. Again, Manning is a Hall of Fame quarterback, but wasn't very good that season, so you don't need a great quarterback to win. Yesterday, to Blank's point, we talked about the last 10 Super Bowl champion quarterbacks, and seven of the 10 were I would consider great. Peyton Manning was one of the ones I would not consider great. Last year for the Rams, I think Stafford is great. Tom Brady, great. Pat Mahomes is great. Patriots again with Brady, great. That's 4 of 4. Nick Foles, no. 4 of 5. Brady, great. 5 of 6. Denver with Manning. You want to say no? That's fine. I can say no there as well. 5 of 7. Patriots again with Brady. 6 of 8. Russell Wilson, 7 of 9. And then Baltimore with Flacco, I would say no. 7 of 10. So exceptions to the rules, but 7 out of 10, 70% of the last decade, the quarterbacks have to be great to win the Super Bowl, or they have a really great team around them. And which one's easier to build? The great defense, the great team around them, or to go out and isolate and find that quarterback?
Look, it's such a fine line. You've got to find the right quarterback, but you also got to strike while the iron's hot. You got to find him early. You got to develop him quickly. You know, kind of like they did with Mac Jones in year one, but then can he? I don't think the Patriots could do what you do. You need to continue to elevate like Russ did with the Seahawks as a third round pick before you had to pay him. Because we also know that you, by the time you have to come pay this guy and pay him the massive dollars and what that does to kind of take away from the rest of your roster, that can limit you too. But you're not going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl these days if you don't have a guy that can be one of the better quarterbacks in this league. And so that's why you have to be realistic in saying, unless you have a guy that comes in like Pat Mahomes, or you have, because similar situation, he sat for a year. He learned under Alex Smith. But that year, too, was groundbreaking in terms of what kind of a leap he took. I don't know that Davis Mills can do that. And if he can't, then I don't think that you can pass up the opportunity if it presents itself with a draft full of quarterbacks.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, in case we missed it, some of the stuff we may have missed that's going on in the sports world. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.